All right, so should be live now with the Brothers Wist. This could be number 12, I do believe, number 12.
Yes, number 12.
And this is the day before Thanksgiving. It's November 21st, so everybody else is kind of scattered to the wind. Andrew had some family misfortune, so he's unable to join us. JJ, who knows what's going on with JJ? He's probably trapped out in the middle of somewhere, someplace doing something. So it's just going to be Justin and myself, Justin Wilson, engineer extraordinaire, man that can do anything.
Except sleep, it seems like.
If Justin was a piece of cutlery, he'd be a Swiss Army knife.
Maybe a cheap knockoff.
Yeah. I would be a spork. I got kind of two modes, that's it. I'm either stabbing or scooping, that's all I got.
Well, you gotta, you know, you gotta be one step up, though. You know, I liked your, the current, you're gonna have to tell us about the current project, the board later.
Oh, for sure, man. But I've been playing a lot here lately.
So it's that time of year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's really my stress reliever, is when I can play and build stuff and just be dumb and not think. So it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good thing.
All right, man. So I really have absolutely no idea what we're going to talk about on this one. So I was hoping maybe you could kick it off. We were talking about you were doing a little bit of a VoIP project recently.
Yeah, I've been helping a company down in southern Indiana. They're hooking up a complex. It's a courthouse and a county garage and houses the prosecutor and things like that. So they've been doing wiring, and I went in for a couple days, and we configured some Cisco switches, and I think they made some progress from the last I heard them. But they're that platform's pretty cool. It's the Epiphany platform with the hosted PBX, and you know, it does all kinds of stuff. You know, all kinds of call routing and hunt groups and all kinds of stuff. So I got to see some of the nuts and bolts of that. So that was pretty cool time.
That's cool. And I've seen a lot of the managed VoIP stuff is getting really popular nowadays.
Yeah, this company, they've been selling a lot to, you know, government agencies and things like that, because I think part of it is just the flexibility that the platforms offer.
Is it something that because I know there's some products out there. I've seen them at the MUM and maybe Wispapalooza, where there's some guys out there hawking kind of the managed VoIP services stuff. Is it something that maybe a Wisp or small organization would be interested in trying to resell, or is it more of just kind of a direct to customer sort of thing?
I think there's kind of two ways that Wisp can approach this. You know, these guys, they bought their own soft switch, so they have a, you know, pretty heavy investment in it. But you know, they also resell to other Wisps around them and things. And I think that's a, you know, real nice way to get your feet wet. You know, find somebody who's got their own soft switch, and kind of go from there. You can use some of their investment, and the thing that I think a lot of Wisps have to worry about is the E911 stuff. You know, you need someone who definitely understands all of that, and so that can get you in some major trouble.
Yeah, I know. What is it like? I think Vonage and Magic Jack. I think part of their agreement says that you're not using this for 911. You have a landline that will be considered a 911 kind of gateway.
Yep. Some of those, because they don't know, you know, where you are. That's the biggest thing. You have to have that ATA or that, you know, that box tied to a physical address. Because if you call somebody, you know, it's supposed to pop up on their phone. This is exactly where they're at.
Yeah. I know I've used, who's it before? Vitality. I've used them to get SIP trunks through. And part of their process, they warn you, it's like, these numbers, you need to go in and register them at your address, you know, so that way if you do dial 911, it's tied to those addresses. I'm sure there's something you could do similar like that.
Yeah, that's, you know, you have some guys out there doing the, I can't think of the open source one at the moment.
Like Asterisk?
Asterisks, yes. Yeah. You know, I know guys who are kind of doing that, and you know, that's all fine and dandy. But you know, I think one of the big benefits of going through someone who has a broker for the SIP trunks and things like that is they understand that 911 stuff.
Yeah,
that stuff. You know, it frankly it kind of scares me because you're basing your whole business on, hey, did I do this right? And if you kind of have a company that does that, all the time, and plus they're brokered and insured and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I know we do a pretty good bit of IP telephony, like at the data center group, because we also do like business DR. So these people will get offices, and so we'll slap phones all over the place. And what I have to do is everywhere there's a physical location, it generally has an elevator or a fire panel or something like that. So you always have to have POTS lines for those guys. So we generally throw POTS line in with just a cheap old 1700 series Cisco router, because we do all call manager. And I love it. Call manager is just robust. It just always works. Some people will complain it's expensive. It's not expensive. We're actually running call manager 4.3 and they're already past version 8. You know, so we got an old call manager, but still, I mean, it just works. It's solid. But also the phones, you can buy those guys like 7960s. You can buy them refurb online for, I don't know, $100.
They're pretty cheap just because they're so widely deployed.
Oh yeah. And they're pretty tough. We've only lost a few. Had a few crack inside. But I mean, other than that, they're pretty tough. And then we just do a gateway and I have them fail over to their local gateway to dial up for 911, and it just works pretty easy. And once a year we go through and dial from every phone, just call up 911, say, hey, sorry, we're just testing our phone system, and make our way around. And so far, it's worked pretty well for us. We actually had somebody dial 911 this morning for whatever reason. Oh, I really? Know what it was. There was a car that had been there for several days, and they wanted to get it towed. I'm pretty sure 911's not who you call to have a car towed.
No, not unless you want the SWAT team to come out.
Yeah, it's not really an emergency type of situation there. Some guys, unfortunately, in your favorite spot for more than a day. But it is what it is. But
I was thinking just today that a nice business would be, and maybe they're doing this, I don't know, is I was driving by a construction area today, and I can only imagine, say, your construction company moving around from place to place, an IP telephone would be, real nice thing, because you never have to change your number based upon, where you're doing construction at.
Oh, yeah. And anybody in your organization, no matter where they are in the world, just picks up, dial your internal extension.
Yep.
Hits you right where you are. And all that stuff's pretty easy to do. And I know how we resell kind of the call manager services. We basically go by a per phone charge, and then we associate, certain organizations into a partition, and then any long distance associated with that partition, we charge for them. So that's pretty easy. But like if you used an asterisk system, I guess there's probably billing backends that you can, little packages you can put in. Or a new one that I've seen that I like a little better is called Elastix. It seems to work pretty good. I know those are pretty easy to set up, pretty easy to administer. I'm just wondering, is it really, I mean, how much money are people making selling VoIP? Can you really compete with like the Vonage market or the Magic Jack?
I think a lot of people like it in the ISP game because you can bundle it together. If you can bundle your internet and your voice together, people like that, and they're actually willing to pay, if not the same, maybe a little more even for that convenience. I actually had a client today. They had on another ISP, they had data, and they had VoIP with the ISP, but then they had DirecTV or something like that, and they actually dropped the wireless ISP to go with a satellite provider because they could bundle all three of them together. That's all they cared about.
Just paying one bill.
Yeah, and I've heard that from several people. Hey, I would, I would switch, or I would do this if you could bundle everything together.
Yeah.
I mean,
because I mean, they make like the Magic Jack server version now, where you, I think it's like $50 or $60, and it's got a little web server built in, so you just plug it into an Ethernet port itself, and then your phone into that, and you're rocking and rolling. So I almost can't imagine being able to make phone service cheaper than that, you know, or cheaper than Vonage. I don't know. Although,
and I think some people like the feature set. I hear from some of the people I do work for, you know, the biggest thing that their customers ask about when it comes to phone service, can I get, you know, phone to email? Can I get, you know, can I get it set up where it, you know, maybe rings a couple different numbers? And I, from what I've kind of learned, that Vonage and those guys do that, but they, you know, they don't have the support of the local guy. So you just can't call somebody up and say, you know, hey, I want to do this.
Yeah, I get you. I get you. I just, you know, I think that same thing about a lot of stuff, you know, it's like, yeah, we could start doing this, but you know, I just look at it from my perspective. I can Google and within 2 minutes find it cheaper somewhere else. You know, it's like, would I really even bother? But I guess your average Joe, they're not really gonna do that. Especially a business customer. I could see a business customer.
I think that's where some of the money is too. Is, you know, you sell 6 or 7 phones to a business, you're saving them a bunch of money, but yet you're making it up in a package deal.
It makes sense.
That's cool. Yeah, that's been kind of, you know, my world for, you know, a couple days, and we got a downstream ISP that we pair with. They're going to be bringing up a Cogent connection, and I've always thought the way Cogent does BGP is kind of weird. I don't know if I had them contact them and say, hey, are you guys really still doing the two-peer thing? I never really understood the two-peer thing with Cogent. Have you ran into that?
I've never actually peered with them. Here, at least in Texas, their name's kind of not so good. You know, I mean, everybody I know that's used them down here has had trouble one way or another. Although, I've had trouble with all of my providers in one way or another, so it's, you know, it is what it is, I guess. You're going to run into it anywhere. But is it like if you're going to peer with them, they have two routers that you pair with or something? Or?
Yeah, there's two routers that you pair with, and one of them you get the routing information from, and the other one you just advertise to. I don't understand the logic behind that.
Weird. You receive from one and then you send from the other?
Almost like that, yeah. It doesn't make sense to me, because every other, you know, peer I've been with, it's just, you know, okay, if you want to bring up two sessions, you know, you're going to peer with this router and this router, and you're going to get the same information from them.
Yeah, just like a layer of redundancy, right?
Yeah.
So, but not with Cogent.
No, I'll have to dig up a link here. It's just, yeah, to me, it's just kind of weird. Yeah, that's and I like doing BGP stuff. It's, you know, it's not really, you know, I don't want to say it's easy. It's just, it's straightforward. There's not a whole lot to BGP.
Yeah, I like really being able to tune it, filter everything out, see it work. For me, it's always been, I can make a small change here, and then I can see it propagate across all of the internet. That's what I really like about it.
Yeah. I've been kind of working on that, and I've been a little frustrated with, did you notice that MikroTik changed around their download site now? You just can't download, like, well, I can't find where you can just download the whole, like, you know, 50 meg package of every, you know, every OS and everything in it. You gotta now go and say, okay, what processor do I have? And then it gives you the, you know, all the packages for that.
No, choose your instruction set. Weird.
Yeah.
Because they used to have like the torrent that would just have everything.
Yeah, you'd suck down everything and it'd be there.
Yeah, which was really convenient.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're the same. As many people as you work with, you're going to run into all different flavors.
Yep.
So it's nice to just have everything in one big package.
Or, you know, if you got someone on site, you're like, okay, just go here and just get everything and we'll deal with it.
Yeah. That's weird. Yeah, now you got to go MIPS BE, MIPS LE. Most everything I do is MIPS BE, though, it seems like.
Yeah, it seems like all their newer stuff's the, MIPS BE. Oh, I was hoping they'd have the Cloud Core router in there set up here, but not yet.
You might still be able to just copy the torrent address and remove the MIPS BE part and have the full torrent. Let me see.
Does that still work? No. Nope. That. Nope.
It's worth a try.
Yeah. So I don't know what the logic behind that was.
No, I don't either. So let's talk about some of the new stuff that's happened since the last time we talked. Let's see. They finally announced pricing and availability for the CCR stuff, at least the initial models.
Yes, I was. It was cheaper than I expected.
It was, yeah. I mean, yeah, significantly cheaper than I expected too. They have the CCR 1016-12. G, that's the 16 core, 12 port gig, so it doesn't have any SFPs or anything like that, and it's got fewer cores than the one we've been seeing, which is the 36 core one. But I mean, if you do the math, that's like 19 gigahertz. So it's not, it's like, oh, it's only 16 cores. I mean, it's still a significant amount of power. And the street price that I've seen so far is like $645.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's insane. So,
I think you mentioned in one of your comments or something, if you're a distributor out there or something with x86 systems, you better be dumping them.
Oh yeah, dude, you better unload. You have a fire sale, quick, fast, in a hurry, or hopefully that stuff will be stolen from your warehouse and then just get insurance money and buy CCRs with it. But
yeah, there you go.
And they said that they're going to start shipping at the end of this month. So, blah. I mean, why would you even consider that? Who was it? Mike Hammond. He's always got to be the devil's advocate. He was saying that maybe you would hold out because it's a new platform. You want to make sure that the bugs get worked out. That's somewhat valid, I guess, because I mean, not only is it brand new hardware platform, the architecture has to completely change to work with it, a brand new version of router OS. But he was saying that he was going to go with a new x86 version. So that's a new version of hardware that's untested with the OSs, and it's probably going to ship with version 6. So to me, I think they're going to fix bugs and focus more on the CCR than they are the x86 package. So I think you're really going to be better off going with that CC. Plus, it's of the x86 ones that are out there, even the new big bad ones, this low model, the entry model, is going to be double, if not triple or quadruple the power, probably more port density, and it's 50% of the price minimum. Yes. Half the price. So I can get two of these for what I can, it's like, why are we still talking? Like, it's pointless. And then the 1036, the 12G one, so it's got the 12 gig ports and the 4 SFPs, and that's the one with the 36 cores. And he is $995.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just, and it's like up to 16 gigabits of throughput. That's crazy. That's crazy amount of power. I mean, so you could, any network I've ever worked on, this could easily handle their load. I mean, easily.
Oh yeah.
The only downside of that is no 10 gig interfaces, no SFP plus on those.
Yeah, that's the only downside. But if you're talking when you're getting into the 10 gig market, you're in my opinion, you're almost, you know, wanting to go with something that, you know, you can call somebody up and say, hey, I got a problem. You know, I need it fixed right now.
Yeah. Although I could see ISPs, like I can see WISPs using this, you know, or just regular ISPs. You know, they've got, okay, I'm bringing up a new city over here. I'm going to do, you know, some maybe failover. So I'm going to get a new internet circuit here. Give me a 10 gig Cogent. I can probably, if I get a 10 gig Cogent, I can probably get it for, I don't know what, 70, 80 cents a meg, something like that, realistically. Yeah. And have it service that big city and then fail over, you know, like, so my other ISP fails and this will backhaul. You know, I could see throwing these in there with 10 gig optics and easily be able to handle my firewalling, my quality of service, you know, do my super kung fu stuff in there. And
Yep.
Get crazy with it, man.
Crazy. Yeah, and they're, you know, they're not some big, you know, 6U chassis that you got to put in and, you know, heck, you know, two of them and, you know, some sort of failover configuration. It kicks some butt.
Low power footprint, small size. Who's it? Andrew Thrift, I think, was saying that that if they had the ones with, I think it was him saying SFP pluses, he would probably buy one every 3 weeks for his customers.
Yeah.
That they have those kind of requirements, and that once that interface gets there, everything's just going to be, I mean, it's going to be hands down the only thing he's going to need to buy. I think right now he's doing server based with some kind of NIC that uses the same chipset that the Hot Lavas do. It's not a Hot Lava. I think it comes right from Dell. I think he's ordering Dells that have the 10 gig NICs. It's the same chipset as the Hot Lava, which I know Hot Lava's been working with MikroTik, you know, to try and get everything as kosher as possible. So it sounds like good stuff. I don't know. I just think it's going to be crazy. I just wish I had some situation where I could actually use one and put it through its paces and all that stuff.
The problem will be is, you know, these guys will have these networks, but they won't be able to tax out the CCR.
Yeah. I mean, I could put one in my Houston data center, because I have 10 gig optics out there, but I've only got a couple of gigs going into that internet-wise right now, so I wouldn't even really be able to stress it even. I wouldn't even be able to get close to stressing this thing.
Yeah, you could load it up with firewall rules and all kinds of things, and it's just sit there and say, okay, what else you got?
Yeah, I could do everything under the sun and still. So I mean, it just means that I see this, golly, especially that the 16 one, God, just with that amount of power. I guess the guys that are doing that aggregation where they do like all their PPOE sessions aggregate back in
at the edge of the network.
Yeah, where they're doing all their EOIP tunnels and bringing everything back in. Those guys, man, they're going to go bananas over these things.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I know the guys at QuickLinks down south of us, they or Shelby Broadband, they do that sort of thing, and I don't know how many, you know, thousands of triple PoE sessions they have on their core router, but you know, I know they're looking forward to something like this.
Yeah, especially I think the more we move away from x86 to the MikroTik hardware, just the more solid they're going to get, you know, because they won't have to worry about all the compatibility issues and stuff. They'll just be able to focus on these products, and they're making them so cheap, there is no reason to use anything else, especially once they put those 10 gig optics in there. They'll be out there, no reason to use anything else.
Yep. Yeah, I like the, you know, I used to be a, you know, okay, you know, I like standards-based stuff, but if it's, you know, if it's a well-put-together, you know, nice, solid, everything works together, why not?
Yeah. And I still have a ton of x86 out in the field, and I'm not going to replace them until they completely kicked over.
You know? Yeah.
But given my druthers, you know, before these options, yeah, I would have just went with the CCR. I would have just chunked those out there. Why not?
Yeah. I'm actually putting off, you know, purchase of a couple x86 systems to, you know, get a CCR instead.
There you go. See some people with some real-world experience with those things.
Yeah.
So let's see. What else has come out of the MikroTik? Well, they had the Australian mum, and unfortunately our Australian's not here to talk about it. So we might as well just kind of quickly skip over it, because the next time we can finally get him on the cast, I'm sure we'll
Yeah, we'll have a we'll have an Andrew specific cast sometime.
just be him talking about all his adventures.
Yeah.
But I know he did. Andrew Cox did a presentation on scripting, kind of getting started on scripting, which I think is brilliant. You know, it's because there's so much power and flexibility in the OS, especially via scripting, and a lot of people just, you know, maybe aren't exactly aware of it, or you know, it's like they just don't want to take the plunge and have to get used to this stuff again. But when you see how easy it is to really kind of get started, I think it'll turn a lot of people around, which is cool.
Yeah, I've seen some guys too. You know, I'm not a scripting guru by any means. I've seen some guys, you know, do some pretty cool scripting stuff. You know, cleaning up, you know, triple PoE queues and things like that, and you know, making sure that the you know, a default catch-all queue is always at the bottom, and you know, things like that. I've seen, you know, seen that done, and it's like, okay, yeah, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, I've seen and I've heard of some. Some crazy kung fu, like people doing like sanity checks on files and stuff that are automatically pulled down. Just crazy stuff. Let's see. So Andrew Thrift, also our Kiwi, the guy from guy with the good hair from New Zealand. he did one on security, so securing your microtik, and in that he talked about some IPS IDS stuff, which I thought was cool. He talked about Suricata specifically was one of the things he talked about, and that's kind of like a multi-threaded sort of snort-ish type of thing. Uses the same rule sets, and
okay.
And I know that one. The first time I heard about that was actually via Tylera, you know, the new CCR platform, because they had kind of partnered with Tylera and made some super optimized version of it. So they've got code with it running right on Tylera. So that would be really interesting if Microtik kind of clued in on that and then through, you know, because on the CCRs, Microtik apparently runs as like a virtual machine, you know, so it pops up so that you could have a virtual machine of Suricata here that you could feed your information to. That would be super cool, super cool.
Just have it as an add-on package.
Oh, man, that would be so sick. If you
That'd
could
be
just,
pretty sweet.
Oh, that would, I mean... Because, you know, IDS, IPS appliances are so expensive nowadays. And so if you could just, you know, take like a nice beefy Microtik and then just drag and drop a package and up and running with one, that would just be, that'd be too much.
Yeah, there's a business here in Indiana. They use Snort and they do intrusion detection for banks. You know, they have, you know, they have guys that monitor, you know, all of these Snort boxes and things throughout, you know. I mean, they're a fairly big company, and all their workers kind of work from home. And, you know, I remember chatting with them, and they're like, hey, we need boxes that have horsepower. You know, we don't want to spend $100,000 on a, you know, a real, you know, IDS unless we have to. But, you know, because we're paying for the horsepower. We're not really paying for anything extra cool. We're just paying for the horsepower for that stuff to be on chip.
Yeah.
So cool. If, you know, along comes this, you know, $1,000 Microtik, if it could do it, you know, pretty integrated, it'd be an awesome thing.
Oh, yeah. That'd be crazy. I mean, I think kind of with the design of the CCR, the ability to run other instances of things, I think that opens up the market to a lot of different integrators in different areas. You know, some people I have NDAs with would be really interested if Microtik could do these things, you know, these different little products that they produce, you know, if they could just snap in a component, you know, they would go, I mean, they would buy literally hundreds, if not thousands of Microtiks. You know, yearly, kind of like, just pumping them out.
Be like the, you know, is it VMware who sells and lets you download, okay, here's this virtual machine that's all set up and ready to go to do spam filtering or to do this. You know, I think that could be a market for them too. Hey, you know, you load in this package and it does this.
Yeah, like, you know, they could partner with, you know, what, like McAfee or these other guys and just have an appliance that snaps in that'll do, you know, like real-time scanning of people's you know, email or you know, like a content filtering, you know, like for web browsing and stuff, like a more complete package sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
Who is it? It's like the FortiGates. Those routers, they have all those little cute snap-ins that do all the little things, the IPSP
stuff,
you know. So why not MikroTik do something like that, you know?
Yeah, it's just software.
Yeah, why not? Charge them a license fee, go to town.
Yeah.
Make more money, who cares?
Send us a royalty check, MikroTik.
We're idea guys here, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure these are all things they've kicked around at one point or another.
Yeah, probably.
Let me see if there's anything else actually useful that I can think of that came out.
I think some of their new stuff is finally shipping, like the, what is it, the watt and a half wireless card and some stuff like that. I've seen some emails where some of their, you know, their products that they announced are actually shipping.
Oh, really?
You know, they had that, I was trying to find
it metal? Is that the metal that's doing
I think the metal shipping, and then they have the R5S HPN. It's the has the big heat sink on the thing.
Oh, just a card. I know.
Yeah, just a card. Yeah, I've seen those shipping. So I think they're actually getting some of this, you know, stuff to market pretty quick. So that makes me feel good about the CCR. You know, hey, it probably will be here by the end of the month.
Well, I mean, that's when they told the distributors that they're going to start arriving, so then they can start shipping out immediately. So distributors have been notified and they're expecting them around the end of this month. So unless, I guess, there's some delay in customs or something, maybe. I don't know. Everything's on track as far as I've heard.
Cool.
Which is cool.
Yeah, I haven't heard too much else out of them. Ubiquity stuff's been pretty solid. As far as they're shipping some of their adjustable antenna stuff. They have those sectors that can go from, I think, 120 down to 90 by just, you know, moving some parts.
Are they calling those the titaniums?
Yeah, the titanium sectors.
Yeah. I think, doesn't Mike have some of those?
I don't know if he has any yet or not.
I think he was talking about them because he was saying something about, does anybody know how to adjust these things?
I'm sorry, they go from 60 to 120 degree.
In lieu of reading the instructions, he'd rather just post on Facebook. Hey, does anybody know how to do this? Crazy. So yeah, I think Mike's got some of that titanium stuff. We'll have to hit him up, see what he thinks about it.
Yeah.
I know it looked beefy. It looked cool.
Yeah, I mean, some of their newer products are, I think they're stepping up the design of it, you know, a little better.
In a big
way. It's not as cheap feeling.
Which, you know, there's always a price associated with that. Price tag goes up a little bit, but I think they've already, you know, you start out cheap, disrupt the market, get people to know your name, and then you start, you know, rolling out a little bit more expensive stuff that's, you know, industrial grade, man. People are going to keep buying it. It's a good plan. I mean, they're doing it the right way.
Yeah.
So let's see. Man, let's, do you want to cut it here in a second, or do you want to talk a little bit more?
I really don't have a whole lot that's new and exciting. You know, so, I've posted a couple things on, you know, my blog about the, you know, the new cable feature in MikroTik OS.
I saw that.
That was in their newsletter. I just kind of copied and pasted that, stole it. But other than that,
I saw you put up something on Air Control Beta 3.
Yeah, they did release that. It's actually getting a little bit better, as far as usability and things goes. I don't think it's ready for a real production environment yet. The last time I ran Beta 2, every device I put into it, it would continually reboot it.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was kind of bad.
Yeah. So that's I thought you meant maybe it's just not polished all the way or ran high on CPU, but
Yeah, it would. I put probably about 25 devices in there, and they were all backhauls. And I noticed, you know, the whole network's going down one night, and I'm like, every device I put in air control to is rebooting. Okay, let's stop that process.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't think there's. It's. I think everybody's been pretty quiet.
Let's see. What did I? Let's see if I got anything. I did a. I finally published that BFD article today. That bidirectional forwarding. Finally,
I just saw that. Button. Yeah.
Finally got around to that. And that's just a quick one. I don't really know too many people using it, but
yeah, explain what BFD actually, what the benefits and what it actually does, maybe.
Okay, well, just really quick bidirectional forwarding detection. First place I ever saw it was in Cisco, and I remember seeing it when I was doing a CCMP restart at one point, I think. And so I didn't know what it was, so I looked it up, and it's basically this little protocol that just sends UDP packets between two connected routers. If you got two routers, it just sends UDP protocols, and you set a time that you want to send, like what interval you want to send, and it's generally sub-second. I think it defaults to somewhere around 2 milliseconds, and then you set a time that you want to receive it, and you and the peer negotiate how frequently you want to send messages, and then each person has configured a multiplier. So I consider my neighbor down if I miss whatever the multiplier's packet number. Okay. So five. If I miss five packets, then I consider my neighbor down. And whenever it does send something down, it doesn't technically do anything itself. It just alerts the other higher layer protocols that are using it. So you associate it with, say, OSPF. So you tell OSPF on the interface, use BFD. So if BFD senses it down, it automatically tells OSPF, hey, this peer is down for whatever reason. It doesn't care if it's a cable break, you know, or somewhere in the middle something's been cut, or say the other guy's routing protocol breaks, or I mean anything, for whatever reason it breaks. It doesn't care what layer of the chain. It automatically tells OSPF, hey, this neighbor's failed for whatever reason, and it tears down the session. So all those routes are flushed out, and it'll continue routing around.
Since it's UDP, it's a little more, you know, it's much more basic, right? So it's, you know, it's more smaller, robust in that sense.
Yeah, it's a smaller packet, so it's going to be more efficient. It just shoots it, doesn't care if it makes it there or not. You know, that's not what its concern is. It just wants to receive. So if you associate it with, say, BGP, BGP default hello messages every 60 seconds. And hold timer, you know, when it's down, it takes three consecutive misses, so 180. So say if OSPF, the layer 2 link in the middle, breaks and both your interfaces are still up, it'll take 3 minutes before your router ever realizes that's down. If you're doing it with BFD on the default, you'll know within a second that it's down. Okay. And tear that down. That's not, you may not necessarily want it to happen that quick. You know, you
can
span it out a little bit, but it does give you that ability to have sub-second. And like in I think in Cisco, I think using EIGRP, you can tune it down to like a second or two to realize that a neighbor's down. But BFD can actually get you even that much faster if you want to use it. So it's there if you have, say, redundant connectivity and you want to, you know, absolutely not miss any traffic or as very little as possible, in lieu of tuning your timers on your protocols. You can let everything default and just let BFD handle all that stuff if you want. And it's got interoperability between Cisco and MikroTik. I haven't actually tested it, but it's supposed to work between the two. And it configures very similarly. So it's really, if you look at the command set, you're looking at like three commands.
Okay, so it's pretty...
Yeah.
Simple configuration.
Yeah. Really small.
Okay.
Really small to turn on. And then some decent debugging. It looks like MikroTik's got some decent debugging. You can log that stuff to either message or syslog, so you can keep track of it that way. And then you can show the neighbor. It'll show you all the information about it. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. And I know I've had people ask me before, you know, I go to IP routing and I see BFD. What is that? You know, it's just it's just something that they saw on the menu, but never really paid attention to. And again, most people, I guess, don't necessarily need it. And like for me, a lot of the time, like especially with my carriers, I like BGP to kind of react solely in some situations. You know, that's the idea behind those lengthened timers, is that so things don't flap too quick. You know, that everything does kind of gracefully move.
Yeah, I've ran into some BGP providers that are really, they're really strict on, you know, the amount of flaps that they will detect before they start, you know, holding you down or, you know, doing some kind of dampening. You know, flap detect, dampening with you.
Yeah. And I can't say that we're any friendlier than any of the other guys, but, you know, you got to protect yourself.
Oh, yeah.
But
I did notice now in maybe you can confirm this. I was setting padding on a BGP pier the other day on the Microtik, adding the and I noticed you could only go up to, I think it was 16. You could only add in, you know, 16 16 virtual hops, really. So I think they Microtik learned from the incident about a year or two ago, where they took down like half the internet.
They took down a lot of Europe, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a little while back. Yeah, because you used to be able to put in virtually any number, and so somebody put in their autonomous system number in lieu of the number of hops they wanted to prepend, and it kind of broke a lot of stuff. But in like in our routers, we had protection on that. We only allow a path to get so long before it starts, you know, dropping it or whatever. So we were protected anyway from stuff like that. But
now, can you do that in the Microtik too? Can you add some protection in?
I don't know. I haven't looked to do that. I should look and see if you can.
That'd be a good.
See if you can pad it on like number of hops. Might be able to do something like that. I haven't looked at it.
But yeah, that's I've been just kind of keeping my head down and nothing too exciting.
Yeah. Let's see what else I've been playing. We made some stilts out of concrete forms the other day.
Those were cool.
And then we, what else did we do? We made a longboard, a 4-foot longboard. Out of plywood. That's a lot of fun. I'll put up a little post on that one too. And then just tonight, we've been riding it like crazy, but we took the trucks off and everything, and then we painted the bottom of it, painted it white. And so I'm going to let one of my sons decorate one half, and the other son's going to decorate the other. And then I'll lacquer it over, so you know, it'll stay. Griffin, my 4-year-old, I'm sure it's just going to be swirls and stuff like that. And then earlier he asked me, can I put stickers on it? I was like, yeah, you could put stickers on it, dude, I guess. And then we also, we play, like every Sunday we stream on Twitch TV. We stream ourselves playing live. And so we've been playing Nintendo games, but we also play arcade games and stuff. So we made this mobile game controller out of Tupperware. So it's got all your regular fighter buttons and fighter sticks. And then the quarters, the giant green button.
Gotcha.
Recycled. They used to be push to exit buttons. and now they're quarter buttons. But yeah, man, we've just been staying busy, man. And I love it. That's like, I run and I build things. That's how we like relieve our stress. And the kids are awesome.
I think I'm going to buy Black Ops 2 for the 360 and probably veg out on it for a while. I buy every Call of Duty game. Like, you know, I'm there at midnight picking mine up. But
shouldn't you be playing Halo 4 right now or something?
I'm not into Halo that much.
Not so much.
Yeah, not too much. You know, I like the, you know, I guess I like the games where I can, you know, I'll never be in that situation, but I could, you know, it's more realistic for me to, you know, be in that situation than to be on some far off planet. So it's like, yeah, I could do that. Yeah. Not really, but yeah, I could. If all the planets aligned, I could.
I got you. gives you a sense of power.
Yeah. I can escape for a little bit.
All right. Well, on closing for me, I have one homage, pay homage to JJ. I got a beagle bone.
Oh, you got a beagle bone.
I got a project to try with. We'll see what happens.
Nice. Right. Nice. Yeah, I'm imagining JJ on some mountaintop, you know, huddled up in a tent, snowed in. Yeah, that's where I think he is right now.
Probably. Well, I don't know. Kim probably wouldn't allow him. Probably trying to make him spend some time with the family for once.
Yeah, it's too close to Thanksgiving. He needs probably to take a break.
I can't nerd out this close to Thanksgiving. She'll never get him back. All right, man. Well, I guess have a good Thanksgiving. Good Thanksgiving to everybody else. I know this cast wasn't of a lot of substance, but you know what? We touch on so many different things. There's probably something in there for everybody.
Yeah, I think so. And I think maybe once the holidays are over, we can, you know, we can have some more guests on. And, you know, if the listeners send in topics, you know, do that, please. You know, give us something to talk about.
Yeah. Since we talked a little bit about security, I was trying to get Tom Smith on this one, the crazy Irishman. So we'll probably get him on the next one. He said he was in, but I couldn't get a hold of him. So we'll just
see what about like. They're what, 6 hours ahead of us?
I think it's like, yeah, it's like the middle of the. It's probably like 3 a.m. or something for him. 3 or 4.
I know I deal with Azotel, which is an Irish company, and I know when it's like 10 o'clock here, it's like 3, 4, 5 there, something like that. So I think they're at least 4 hours ahead of us.
Mm. Crazies. They're all crazy over there. All right, man. Well, cool. I guess you have a good one. Everybody else, thanks, and bye. Let me hit the end button.